Today we're speaking with Joshua Creamer, a Queensland barrister. His major areas of practice are civil and human rights discrimination, commercial, family law, mining, energy and resources, and native title. I'll let him introduce himself properly because he'll do a better job than I can.
My main area of work is working with Indigenous Australians. Most recently I worked on the Palm Island case, which was a rights discrimination case, and I'm now working on the Stolen Wages case here in Queensland. I'm the former president of the Indigenous Lawyers Association of Queensland.
I started by asking Josh how he makes changes in his community on a daily basis.
Look, it's interesting in that, you know, you think about what your community is. A large focus of what I do is obviously the Indigenous community. So for me, I've been able to have the benefit of an education and got all the way through law school and then on to a career in law. And I like to use those skills that I've developed and the relationships I've developed through, you know, study and work to benefit the Indigenous community.
What responsibilities to country, family and community do you have as a Wanyi and Kalkadoon man?
As a Wanyi and Kalkadoon person, I never had the benefit of going through law. So I don't know if you know, but part of Indigenous culture is that transition from going from boy to man, and women also go through particular ceremonies. So for me, I don't feel that I've got that responsibility. Culturally, I don't. I haven't had the benefit of that transition. So when I think about what responsibilities I have, I suppose it really comes back to more broadly about how can I use the position and the skills I have to benefit the Indigenous community. And a lot of my work is focused on areas where there's disadvantage, youth justice and social justice issues, and native title relationships to land.
Could you run us through briefly what happens when an Indigenous group attends court, and I assume that's the federal court, to get a determination with regard to native title application?
A native title claim is a very long process. So I think there's, on average now, about 50% of the claims that are currently before the court have been in the system for between 10 and 17 years. So they've been around for a long time. It's a very difficult process. If a traditional owner group wants to start proceedings for a native title, they need experts, anthropologists, they need lawyers to prepare affidavit material, etc. And that can be a lengthy process in itself, a year or two, till they get to the stage, which is the first stage in actually filing a native title claim. From the day of filing, as I said, it can be over a decade or longer until they actually get a determination from the federal court. In prosecuting a native title claim, it's a difficult, lengthy process, and it's got many, many stages. Ultimately, you're satisfying the state and the court that you have maintained a traditional law and custom from pre-sovereignty society, so prior to European arrival, up to today, unbroken.
What percentage of native title applications are successful?
I don't know the exact figures of how many would be successful, but there's been a lot more emphasis on resolving native title claims by way of consent determination, so the state actually agreeing. In Queensland, for example, the first one of those would have been about 5 or 6 years ago, and there's been a whole sway since. There are still a lot of matters that go to trial, and native title trials are a particularly big process. You imagine the whole federal court actually sitting out on country, hearing evidence, and that still does occur, but certainly there's a drive to bring about some more speedier resolutions than there has been previously.
When I saw you speak at the Prison Songs screening, you explained that you worked with young Indigenous people in Queensland detention centres and you work in youth justice. We know about Dondale in the Northern Territory. Does Queensland have the same problems?
I'm not sure if you're aware, but around the time of that screening of that episode from Four Corners, I think it was, I was one of the people here in Queensland that spoke out publicly about the circumstance of particularly juvenile detention centre in Townsville and the treatment of young people there. From that, the Attorney General announced an inquiry. Unfortunately, the terms of reference for that inquiry were very narrow. There wasn't public hearings and it was a relatively short process and wrapped up in the course of a couple of months. Some of the treatment that I'd heard about and was explained to me and detailed to me was certainly very serious and worthy of a Royal Commission. As I said, the Commissioner of Inquiry probably wasn't as broad or as significant as it could have been.
Why are children being locked up?
Oh, you know, it's really the social inequities that exist in the community. The reality is that a lot of the children there have come from backgrounds where for at least two or three generations now, parents have suffered the most severe social and economic disadvantage in all areas, health, education, employment, and that impacts on these kids. A lot of the kids sitting in those detention centres are there on remand, which means they haven't had their matter dealt with, but because they don't have a suitable environment to go to, they can't be let out on bail. 10 and 11-year-old kids, and that's how young some of these children are in these detention centres, 10 and 11 years old. They have really little control over the circumstances they find themselves in, and because they're in the environments they are, they're more exposed and at high risk of committing offences and more likely to wind up in the detention centres.
You're listening to Brisbane Line. Here is Blue King Brown with Water before we get back into part two of our interview with barrister Joshua Creamer. Today we're speaking with Joshua Creamer. Also during your Prison Songs talk, you mentioned Palm Island. For those of us who don't know, could you explain what happened in 2004?
In November 2004, Murungi Dumungi, in his early 30s, was walking home mid-morning. Walked past one police officer and one police liaison officer. He was subsequently placed under arrest and taken to the watch house. Within about 45 minutes of his arrest, he was found on the cell floor. a short time later pronounced dead. There was uproar in the community about how this person could be under police arrest and die within an hour. A autopsy report concluded that he had four broken ribs, a spleen split in two, and some other injuries. When that information was released to the community on Palm Island, there was a protest and subsequent burning down of the police station and the adjoining courthouse. And in response, police sent close to 100 officers in the days following that, including Team CERT and PSRT officers. They exercised full control over the island for a number of days. Yes, I was involved in a Palm Island class action relating to Mr. Dumaji's death and the response of the police in the week after his death. The judge handed down a decision on 5th of December and it's actually just being appealed now.
Outside the class action, could you maybe give us an idea about why these issues are still relevant today?
Well, the treatment of any person in custody should always be relevant to the community. They are in the care of the state. And they were the responsibility of the state. So that includes all of us. And as we saw in Western Australia with the coronial inquest of a young lady named Miss Jew, these incidents continue to occur. In respect of Palm Island, the judge made findings in there at first instance, so it's on appeal, but the judge made findings that the number of the police officers involved conduct was racially discriminatory. Those types of behaviours and those issues will always be a concern to the community where they're found to have led to lack of care or death. Those issues from 2004 are still highly relevant because there had been a Royal Commission conducted 25 years ago, and there should be certain obligations on those who come into contact with people in the criminal justice system. The important thing for Indigenous people is that they're severely overrepresented in the criminal justice system.
That also ties into what we were talking about before with the Northern Territory. There's a Royal Commission there, and you've mentioned some other Royal Commissions over the past 25 years. Do the Royal Commissions help?
I think they do. You know, there is a general misconception in the community. I think that, these Royal Commissions, they just release these reports and they sit off in the ether. But when you actually read the Royal Commission that was conducted into Aboriginal deaths in custody, you realise that there's two elements to it. A part focuses on social and economic factors and historical factors as well. Historical is a significant issue. The report itself then doesn't actually make any recommendations to wholesale address all those issues. That's not what it's about. Unless we as a community address those issues, there's still going to be over-representation. The second part of the Royal Commission, which is the recommendations, is really recommending a standard of care and a standard of conduct for people when, A, they come into contact with those in the criminal justice system, or B, to ensure that incidences don't arise which shouldn't ordinarily arise. One of the Royal Commission recommendations was that detention should be a step of last resort. If you look at Murrumji Dumaji, should a man be in custody for a public nuisance offence when a fine or a notice to appear in court might have been another option. There are these recommendations that's made. They are adopted into things like the police handbooks. They are adopted into watch house handbooks and hospital, etc. But the question is, are they always ultimately followed?
Finally, if some of our listeners who aren't Indigenous wish to support Indigenous people's fight, how can we as allies do that?
Find one issue, and whether it's over-representation, whether it's children in care, Indigenous education, one issue. Educate yourself about it. Build some good relationships and networks with people who can help you educate yourself about it. And once you get to a point where you are comfortable and have some knowledge, start advocating about the issue. I mean, there are so many issues that affect all communities, but particularly the Indigenous community. I'm not in a position to be able to advocate on all those. I'm not an expert in all those, but find your area and build your level of knowledge and start advocating and informing others about these issues.
That was Joshua Creamer ending that report. In 2016, he was recognised by Chambers Asia Pacific as one of Australia's outstanding young lawyers. For more information about the Royal Commission into Juvenile Detention in the Northern Territory, go to www.childdetentionnt.royalcommission.gov.au, and there's Twitter and video links in there as well. For information about Queensland prisons and our own review of youth detention centres, go to www.youthdetentionreview.qld.gov.au. and www.sistersinside.com.au. For background about the death in custody of Cameron Domagie, read Chloe Hooper's The Tall Man and also see the Australasian Legal Information Institute's Indigenous Law Resources Library at www.austlii.edu.au. You're listening to 4ZZZ 102.1 FM's Brisbane Line.